When is the last time you listened to a podcast about web development, web design, and small business and didn't fall asleep? Yes, we cover web development, web design, and small business, but like actual human beings with personalities. If you're a beginner, we're not going to talk over your head. It's more like asking your buddy for help. We have guests, we have fun, and let me tell you, these two can get off on a tangent. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to HTML All the Things Podcast. This is Matt Lawrence and Mike Curran.
That's it, everybody. We are back. This is the HTML All Things Podcast. This episode is titled Work-Life Balance for Web Developers in 2024. So we're going to be discussing, of course, work-life balance. And if you don't really know what that is, you probably should. So we're going to cover that first. And then we're going to talk about the challenges of work-life balance in tech, like digital availability, you know, those type of things. We're going to talk about some situations that you may encounter in 2024, some sort of topical things that have happened this year thus far. And how do you avoid going insane is the final thing we're going to touch on. So if this sounds interesting to you and you want to support the show, you can go check us out on that Patreon. Leave a review, rating on your podcast app. Join us in our Discord server. Share this with your friends. And if you want to learn on an interactive media player code editor, go check out Scrimba. We have a Scrimba affiliate link. It'll be in the show notes and show description if your podcast app supports it. Mike, you wrote this episode. So what is work-life balance in tech?
Yeah, I think like the motivation for this episode was the fact, well, first of all, the situation in 2024 for tech or in web development in general is pretty intense. From what I've seen, a lot of people are kind of questioning if they want to stick around. A lot of people are questioning if they're, you know, if they're going to go insane if they keep going the way they're going. And I just wanted to kind of lay out the situation a little bit, talk about work-life balance from the perspective that we're in right now, where I'm at with work-life balance. Like Matt and I have talked on the podcast about this before, but as you progress in your career and as you get older, work-life balance starts to mean different things. And I think that's okay. That's another really good point that I wanted to point out. And I think just to jump right into like, what is work-life balance? One thing that it's not is that it's not this thing where it's just like, I have 8 hours of work a day and 8 hours of play a day and I am balanced. It's not like a robotic balance. It's more about being able to work and enjoy life at the same time without, you know, having it be this crazy amount of stress and this really negative thing over your head, right? Like you want to have that. You're not going to love every part of work. That's just not a reality. But you also shouldn't hate every part of work. And you also should have a way to like decompress. You should have a way to get out of work if you need it. You should have a way to also kind of motivate yourself and work a little bit longer if you need it. But you have to balance it in the way that you're not going to go insane. And that's why like the last segment here is like how to avoid going insane. Because that's really what you're trying to avoid, right? Like you're trying to avoid that snapping point where you can't work anymore and you just become burnt out. And it is a very real reality in certain situations for people, especially right now where like, if you have to balance, you know, the tech job plus maybe doing like content creation on the side plus a family, whoo-wee, like that is, it's not easy. I can attest to that right now because I'm kind of going through that. So you need to cut stuff out of your life and stuff like that. So this will be drastically different for everyone. Everyone's going to have a different way to balance their work and life. Some people, depending on what age you are, depending on what stage of your career you are, your balance might be shifted towards work, right? Like your balance might be like, hey, I want to grind out work. I want to be in this workspace. I'm motivated. I like it. So you go down that space. And then maybe if you're, again, getting older and you have a family and you have other hobbies that you're interested in, it's going to be shifted back towards like, hey, I just want to do a really good job at work, but I really want to spend more and more time with the family, right? Like I really want to spend that time that I have right now instead of just like grinding at code. I want to like go out and go for hikes with your kids. So it is not, there is no one balance fix all. And that's a good thing to know because some people will try to push their balance on you and you should always push back on that because if you don't feel the same way they do, that's justified. If you feel like you can work a little bit longer, that's okay. That doesn't mean you're going to explode into smithereens. If you feel like you need to step back a little bit and you're seeing all these like grind TikTok accounts that are just like, I work 24 hours a day and I'm fine, that's also okay to be like, no, I'm not that way. Like, I'm not going to grind for 24 hours to get a job and or to do this job and to, you know, essentially just go crazy at the end of it. I'd say even for people that enjoy the grind, right? Like, even for people that are working like 10 hours, 12 hours, 15 hours a day, you should still consider what you can do to balance that out a little bit, right? Like, so even if you're willing to put in that grind work, I think it's still important to think about the other side. Because, for instance, if you're going, right? And you're grinding away at work and you're trying to elevate yourself, what happens if you get laid off? Because just because you're putting in a ton of work and a ton of hours, that does not prevent you from getting laid off, right? If you didn't put time into hobbies, connecting with people, upskilling, doing other things outside of just grinding at work, you might be in a situation where you are worse off than a lot of people that did have work-life balance. Because believe it or not, that balance is achieved by having conversations with other people, having like going out, going to dinner, going out with friends. And those connections that you make might be more valuable than that extra 3 hours a day that you spend grinding out a piece of code that no one cares about. So it's still important to push back and have a little bit of balance, even if you're at the stage of life where you want to grind.
I guess there's like a bit of a difference there too, if you think about it. So sometimes you're like really into the grind for the money, but sometimes you're really into the grind because the project is really good. And so you may really want to see some sort of web app or website kind of come to fruition, you know, come out, or maybe you're doing a charitable cause and you're really into that and you really want that to come out. And so this is a challenge in that you don't want to, how do I describe this? It's like, let's say you show up to work and you're paid a salary and you're supposed to do 8 hours. Now, Mike, you know, a good call out that it's not just like 8 hours work, 8 hours play, 8 hours sleep, it's sort of a more of a blend at times, especially. And what ends up happening is if you are a person that's supposed to show up for 8 hours, you show up for 16 hours, you show up for 12 hours, you show up for 8 hours, whatever you're doing, or 9 hours, like whatever, you're doing a bit of overtime. What might end up happening is, A, you might burn out, but if you're super into it, meaning you're not super into it just for the money, usually you're super into the actual work itself, it's a bit different. Because some people are so into their work that even when the boss kicks them out and says, hey, the office is closed, get out of here, they go and work on a side hustle doing the exact same work just on a different project, right? So that is where sort of this work-life balance kind of gets messy. But what I'm trying to talk about is office politics. You keep doing that overtime, you show up to the office over and over and over again, overtime, 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 you don't ask for extra money or whatever, okay? Then the one time you need time off, or the one time that you are burnt out, or you're tired or, you know, whatever, and you're just kind of feeling down in the dumps and you want to take a break from work, sometimes, and I have seen this, the expectation from the workplace is that you're always there. And so they will contact you like you're always there. They will even sort of deny, they might even deny vacation time if it's within their rights. It could become an office politics situation. Because I have a friend who works constantly and all the time, in evenings, weekends, text messages, this, that. And I've had several conversations with him where I said to him, you know, younger, when he was first getting established, right? First getting married, first getting house, whatever, all that stuff. I was like, man, you have to be careful working this much, because once you, I didn't know if they wanted to have kids at the time, but it's like when you have kids or when you have another hobby, like Mike said, or whatever, the expectation is there that you're going to be there all the time. You're always going to be on the phone. You're always going to be on answering the text messages and the emails and stuff like this. Once they ended up having a kid, then he goes, okay, I want to spend more time with this kid. And it's like, yeah, but those text messages, those phone calls are still going to come in. They're constantly going to be pouring in. The bosses are going to be raising eyebrows like, hey, what's going on? And, you know, he works for a fairly large company, but he's still almost getting singled out in this way of like, you know, constant phone calls, constant this, constant that, when that isn't even billable sometimes. And it's because I'm not even going to blame necessarily, you know, because he's customer facing. I'm not going to even necessarily blame the customers, but it's like partially his fault, partially the company's fault. Like, it's a bit of a mess. It's like he's only getting paid for the 8 hours. So why is it that he's doing like 16 hours? And again, it's a larger company. Someone else could pick up the slack. Another shift could pick up the slack. That's something that could be done. but it isn't done because, again, the expectation is, oh, this person will just pick it up, pick it up, pick it up. And so then his work-life balance gets destroyed when he's trying to go on vacation. For example, they were trying to go to Florida just, I think, last year. It was like, hey, man, what I'll do is I'll modify your duties to email only. And it's like, oh, good. Yay. I get to go to Florida and then constantly email you solutions and do phone calls and get pulled into things. That sounds great. Why don't I just stay here, save the money on the Florida trip, and then just do email? Why wouldn't I just work at that point? And that's another hole, right? The expectation's been set up. Now it's like, oh, man, just work when you're on vacation. Then it's like, well, I might as well keep grinding. And now we're on this this sort of snowball. And now we're just like, well, I guess I'm just going to keep working and working and working. And then eventually you might crash.
Yeah. And that's a really good point. Like, depending on the company, depending on your management, if you're not clear with the fact that you're overworking, and this is like a technique that I recommend, is that like, if you are going to be going above and beyond, I'd be very clear with that. Like, hey, I'm here after hours. I'm going to do this. No problem. But be clear that you're doing that. If you're not clear that you're doing that, yeah, expectation is that you're always going to be doing that, because how are they supposed to know that this isn't a normal thing for you, right? Unless you're clearly labeled that. And even if you do clearly label that, the expectation might be set anyway. And if you go down to your regular 8 hours, you might be seen as slacking, and your next review might have negative connotations because, like, hey, you did this much last quarter and now you're lagging behind your last quarter. Like, the problem with capitalism, side rant, is that everything always, numbers have to always go up, right? No matter what you do, like, even if you're super successful, you're doing everything perfectly, right? Your numbers have to always go up for you to be improving and maintaining status quo, essentially. Maintaining status quo is numbers go up, not numbers stay the same. That's capitalism. As soon as numbers stay the same, regardless of if it's like revenue numbers or your own output numbers, it becomes the situation where, like, well, why aren't you pushing yourself? Why aren't you improving? Again, correct. Why is there a red arrow? Why is there a neutral arrow? A neutral arrow, God forbid. That means we're not innovating, right? Like, it's just, it is a real big problem. So if you set your expectation that you're going to be this crazy engineer or crazy developer or whatever, IT worker, at the top level of like 18 hours a day, right? And you kill it and you get an amazing review and you get your raise. What's going to happen again at the next review when you only work 8 hours? And I say only work 8 hours, even though that's what you're getting paid for. So really good point, Matt. It's tough to fight that. One piece of advice that I have over that, other than like declaring that you're working extra, is once you're seated in the industry, once you have your foot in the door, and once you've overworked at that company, it's probably a good point to be like, hey, I need to look at another job. I need to go and, you know, because that's the way to get the next paycheck, right? Like, that's the way to get the next pay raise. You're never going to get the same pay raise that you would get at your company that you're currently working at that you would switching to another company, because now you have this experience that you can build on and you can renegotiate the contract with someone else. So good, it's a good indicator for you to be like, okay, I'm going to work less at this next company. I'm already more seasoned. I've already done my grind, and I'm going to set my expectations lower right away. So it's easier said than done. I don't want to make it seem like, hey, I'm just going to get a new job and it's super easy. No, you're going to have to put extra work on top of whatever you're working right now to update your resume, upskill, all that to get that job. Not easy, but it is a thing that you can do, and you can actually make a lot more money that way. Having said that, some more work-life balance stuff, especially in the tech space, remote work and flexible hours. Like, a lot of times you won't have like a 9-to-5, or you won't obviously have a commute to the office as well. Like, so that's kind of factored out to it. It becomes a little bit blurrier. Work-life balance becomes that, like, I mean, you're at home, you're working, you're at home, you're doing your fun stuff, like whatever, you're like, you're with your family. That the blend is both good and bad, because yeah, you can spend more time with your family, but on the other hand, you can technically spend more time at work because you're never away from work. If you're working from home, your office is always a step away, and employers will take advantage of that. Even if it's not conscious, they know that their entire team is remote. No one's going to the office, no one's commuting. So there's none of this buffer time that a traditional office job would have. Even with email and phones and stuff like that, there was still that buffer time, like, okay, at least he's commuting, he's with his family, et cetera. Now it's like, well, I don't know. Like, first of all, the flexible hours, is he working 9-to-5, or is he working 12-to-8? unless you clearly communicate your hours, that's going to be part of how to not go insane. But unless you clearly communicate your hours, it's up in the air, and a lot of people don't. So that's kind of like the definition of work-life balance in tech. That's what makes it a little bit more challenging. But I do want to talk about the challenges of work-life balance in tech. We've touched on a few. I want to dive in a little bit into like some more. Matt mentioned it already. There is no like off time. It always feels like you're on call. So Matt's example of his friend that had to go on vacation and still answer emails, that is a super common thing in tech. And it's almost expected, right? Like it's almost like, okay, so I mean, you have direct connection with the clients. No one else has that connection. So if you leave and the client needs something, we're kind of screwed. So we have no choice but to make you still the connection to the clients, right? Like that's the reasoning of management, right? I'm just telling you the reasoning. It's not the correct reason. The correct reasoning is this is a problem. If one employee is in charge of all clients or this chunk of clients and no one else has ever talked to them before, then what happens? First of all, if the employee, we lose that employee, that transition of knowledge is going to be very difficult. You might lose clients because of that. And second of all, what happens when the employee needs time off? They don't think that through. Like because they're always on the go, 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 go.
Yeah.
They don't think ahead. It's not malicious. I don't think it's malicious most of the time. Like they're not like actively trying to screw this person's life over. It's just part of the tech space of like everything is constantly moving and you need to plug all these different pieces together and hiring is expensive and like it just becomes a mess. So when you're in a position where you can be a manager and can hire, I highly recommend cross-training. Like regardless of the situation, having someone that can cover someone else, this is something that's used in almost every industry for a good reason. It should be used more in tech. Anything that you're doing, someone else should be able to come in and spin up on. Like they don't have to be like exactly the same as you, but they should be able to cover you, especially when it's client-facing.
I will say too that if everything relies on an employee answering when they're not there, that's honestly a failure of management to an extent. I understand that in smaller companies, it might just be a logistical problem of which we have two or three people. They all have split responsibility. So it's a problem kind of baked into the scale of the business. But when you actually have team members and team leads and, you know, a structure in a larger company, that's completely a failure of management. Because what if this person, like, forget vacation, forget voluntary leaving the business. What if this person falls, breaks their leg, gets injured in some way, ends up in the hospital? Now what? Now what do you do? This person is unconscious. What do you do? You know, and that exact situation of like, let's say you're, I don't know, unconscious for some reason, or you just disappear for some reason. That business is just going to move on without you. So that's almost a point toward work-life balance in a way too, because the business isn't going to go like, well, you know, Mike disappeared one day and he handled all the receipts and I guess we got to shut down because we have to do receipts for taxes and Mike's not here anymore. So I guess that's it. The business is just going to continue to do, like continue to move on and replace you and do those, you know, you're a cog in the machine at the end of the day. So I mean, a point toward work-life balance in that way. And it's also a point, like I said, against the management of like, if you're the apex point, if you're a critical point, that's great for job security in a way, right? A little bit of job security. However, it might be worth mentioning to your manager and go, hey man, like I'm the only contact and like, I'm going to leave. Like there's like, at some point I'm going to leave to go on vacation. At some point I might need a health thing. At some point I might need to not be here for a day or two. And if you absolutely can't live without me, I mean, that sucks, but I'm not going to be here. There's like, it's unrealistic to assume that someone's just going to be there for whatever, however long, 30 years of their career. Just be ready at any time. Don't worry.
Yeah. And I mean, again, this is the point where like, if you don't own the business, should you really be putting that in that extra time to profit someone else's pockets? That's the other, like, that's what essentially what Matt's saying is like, you're a cog. You are, anyone is replaceable, no matter how crucial you think you are. Anyone in a business is replaceable, other than maybe the people that own the business, right? Because if they can't provide the money, then they're not replaced. Like you can't, unless they get like voted out or whatever. So yes, as a business owner, it's a completely different conversation. And we're going to talk a little bit about that part, like especially with freelancing, where it becomes very difficult to manage because now you're like, well, every minute that I put in, I can be making more money because I am the business owner. I'm the stakeholder here. Whereas if you're the employee, you need to do your job. You need to do it well. You don't need to do anything on top of that, realistically, right? Like you don't need to line the pockets of whoever hired you just because you feel obligated that they hired you and you feel, you know, I don't know, grateful obligated. Or something. Yeah, you feel obligated, grateful. It doesn't matter. That's not why they hired you. They hired you to do the job. And as long as you're doing it and doing it well, there's not going to be a problem. So that's the mentality that you have to take to kind of step towards work-life balance in that situation.
I think the difficulty in discussing work-life balance comes down to, I want to call it like an elitist mindhood, but maybe it isn't mindhood as well. Anyway, an elitist like thought process of like, okay, if we just break it down and we kind of try to remove emotion from the situation, because work-life balance is kind of emotional. It's like, I need time to do stuff. It's like, but you don't need time. You know, that'll be the argument. That'll be that elitist argument. You don't need time. I mean, you could just tell your wife and kids to go away and then you just work, or tell your husband and whoever else to go away. Tell your kids to go away and you'll just work, you know, you'll just work and you'll be, and then you'll make all this money. And it's a really sort of like elitist way to think about it, as like, you don't need time off, but the business is 24/7, 365, throw yourself into it, be super enthusiastic, go at it super hard, be there for the opportunities, show it, you know, show us your best, go up the ranks, climb the corporate ladder, get into management, get into executive levels. Eventually, you know, the list keeps going on and on and on. And there's that argument of, are you a cog in the machine that is easily replaceable? Are you a cog in the machine that is also just easily replaceable, but you're super crucial? Like you're managing a whole bunch of things. And so the mechanic doesn't want to touch you. The management doesn't want to kick you out. So like, you make yourself useful, right? There's that whole thing. And then there's also the thought of like Mike said, I want to be a person that's hired. I get my contract says 8 hours. I'm going to show up for 8 hours and then I'm going to spend my time skiing and those type of things. And that's looked down upon in the kind of corporate landscape sometimes, where it's like, well, yeah, but like sales are all the time. Like, what if a client wants you to talk to them at 8 p.m.? You should go on at 8 p.m., but then you should need to be there at 8 a.m. as well. So you need to do that. But then like, I mean, 8 p.m., you had that call. Why don't you do a sales? Why don't you like prepare the sales documents after it? So then in the morning, you can ship them off to the boss. Like, you may as well just do that. And then like, you may as well. It's this like sort of like line in the sand between the sort of like corporate elite mentality of being just, I don't know, a business person, I suppose, where you say the business is demanding all the time. Of course, because business world always goes on. Everyone's on different schedules. There's always a client to call. There's always a thing to fix. There's always something to update, upgrade, whatever. So become the cog in the machine that is difficult to replace, right? You're always replaceable, but become difficult to replace, climb the corporate ladder and go way up. Or have the more human approach, but a business isn't human. So why would you do that? That's kind of what I'm trying to get. I don't know if I'm articulating this well, but there's like this constant sort of like push and pull, I would say, between those two forces. Because whenever people post about work-life balance, if the post picks up on social media or something like that, there'll be people in the comments that go, yeah, but you know, you're spending time gaming or skiing or driving or whatever, I'm working and I'm just going to steal your business because you're not on it. And they're right. Like that might happen. Like in the business world, things keep going. So then it's like, okay, I'm starting to get pulled toward that elitist side, but then you start burning out and then you try to get, it's like this constant tug of war that is, it's difficult to discuss sometimes because some people are so far in that corporate elitism side of the fence. And some people are so far on that work-life balance, you know, have hobbies, do things and hang out with family. You know, you only live once. It's such a difficult back and forth to have.
Yeah, like it's such a complicated conversation. It always is, because we're business owners and we understand that side of things, right? And we've also been employees and are employees and are working for clients, and we understand that side of things. And like at the end of the day, realistically, like from my perspective, I've done this for a while now. As someone that's like, let's say, managing a team of developers. I care about the work-life balance of the team because I know that if their balance is good for them, they're going to be able to output better product for us as the company. That I know that for a fact. As soon as it skews the other way, where they're grinding to the point where it's diminishing returns, and it's severely diminishing because not only will you might lose them as a developer, you'll lose output. They might make mistakes that could cost you a lot of money. Like, there's so many negatives about overworking someone in the developer space that it's very obvious why you should care very much so about work-life balance. Like, you should care from the management perspective and your own perspective, because you could burn out and lose your career. The manager could lose their developer that is critical in whatever thing. Like, it just makes sense. Stepping back as like a CEO or something, they don't see that. They just see hours in, hours out, output in, output out. That's where it becomes really difficult. Is like, if you want to impress the CEO and the CEO is there 12 hours a day, you not being there 12 hours a day, this is a mindset thing. Like, you might feel bad. You might feel obligated. And like, it just becomes this rabbit hole where the CEO has incentive to stay there, first of all, 12 hours a day. They're getting bonuses based on stuff. They're getting all these incentives. They're making usually ludicrous amounts of money.
But many won't, I'm gonna be clear. Many CEOs will not stay there 12 hours a day. Especially larger companies, they'll just sort of take off and do whatever.
Yeah, and that's fine. Like, whatever. Yeah. I'm just talking like the people that see the CEO and try to mimic them or something. It's easy for me to say that you shouldn't, but in the same situation, I know that it would be difficult for me to also like step back and like, you know, clock out at 8 every day, because I know that in that corporate culture, it's probably not seen as correct. I would do it if especially if it was my first job. I would do it. I would grind it out. And then I would start looking for a better place, right? Like, I would start looking for a better job. That would be my end goal. My end goal wouldn't be, hey, I want to stay at this company forever. My end goal would be, hey, I can see myself burning out. So I'm going to stick it out for as long as I can because I need to get that experience. And this is still a good company. Like, there's probably some benefits of doing it. You're getting paid well. And I'm going to be looking at the same time after a certain amount of time. I'm going to give myself that line in the sand. And then in your own head, this is a way to avoid going insane. If you're in that grind mindset, if you're in that crunch, as long as you have a way out of it, it becomes easier. It's that thing where, like, after you come back from vacation, it's a good idea to plan your next one because it gives you that thing to work towards. And it helps. It mentally helps as long as you're having a way out. And when there is crunch in the workplace, it's important as the management side to also let them know that it's temporary. This is something that's apparently not done in gaming very often, or at least done in a very bad way, where like the gaming industry is known to go from crunch to crunch essentially at this point, or crunch to layoff. So it's just brutal. But the reality is that if you want to keep your team, you need to make sure that they see a light at the end of the tunnel. Otherwise, they're going to burn out.
You can kind of think about overworking as so someone like the CEO, or someone that, like, a very active CEO, like someone that's really involved, or any of the management team or any of the team members, really, if they're really involved and they're constantly looking at stuff work-related, they're constantly doing stuff work-related all the time, and it's sort of just sprinkled in throughout every aspect of their life. They're reading about work while they're in bed trying to go to sleep. When they wake up, the first thing they do is check their emails and those type of things. Those type of people are constantly dealing with a problem. Like, dealing with the work problem. And if you think about it, like, in real life, if you had like a flat tire, imagine just constantly thinking about ways to fix the flat tire, prevent a future flat tire, you know, check on new types of tires. And it sounds like a stupid analogy, but what I'm trying to get at is when we have a problem in sort of our general life, it's sort of like, you know, call a contractor, call a mechanic, fix it yourself, buy the parts, install the stuff, paint the house, do whatever. But you don't sit there and sort of like ruminate and constantly try to solve that problem. And that's kind of what overworking is doing, is you're constantly just looking at the emails, constantly in it, constantly chatting with people, constantly, constantly, constantly. And so when a CEO that is their life, like, to them, even if they left that company, they would probably go to another company and do the exact same thing, where they would be on calls all day, all night, all weekend, and whatever. Like, that is their life. And so they actually enjoy it, and it's a different situation for them. Also, a lot of the time when you are a person that flows phone calls, you will sort of get some reprieve in between calls. Whereas if you're sort of a person that's constantly just dealing with technical problems like a web developer, and you're constantly just in it, imagine just ruminating on a problem in your life. Like, take it out of programming for a moment and just ruminating and trying to fix it and improve it and whatever. Just think about that. I want to get the perfect couch for my living room. Okay, what does that mean? Well, it has to have longevity, but also has had good value, but I want it to be sustainable, but I don't want it to be leather, but I don't want, and I don't want it to be, you know, this, because it's this temperature, but I don't want it to just to be this color because it'll fade, but I don't want it to be, like, think about if you just thought of and planned out the perfect couch purchase for like a week. It would be exhausting. It would be really ridiculous. We just kind of make a decision, right? Some people will think more, some people will think less, but at the end of the day, people have couches in their living rooms. There's not living rooms across the country that are empty because no one has found the perfect couch. Well, apply that same sort of overthinking and overworking of a problem to work. If you look at work as a problem, meaning you're a programmer, you solve problems, you code up solutions to problems. You think about the problem of work all the time. You're trying to figure out the perfect solution. You're trying to be there all the time. You're trying to figure out the best social way to handle emails and phone calls. You're constantly in it. How crazy would you go? You know, how crazy would it be? How much rumination and panic and overworking? It's crazy. And that will happen to a lot of people.
Yeah. Exactly. It's just absolute insanity for some people. And it's unfortunate because I feel like it's getting worse. I feel like the situation is only getting worse. There's not this clear line in the sand as there used to be with work and time off. And again, that's a lot of it. It has to do, unfortunately, with remote work. Like, we're not ready. We were pushed into the transition to remote work. Like, Matt and I have been working remotely, first of all, for like 7 years. Right. But a lot of people and a lot of managers were pushed into remote work because of the pandemic without really thinking about how to actually transition properly to it. Some of that was now pulled back because they didn't think it through and they weren't able to like accommodate and they weren't able to, you know, convince their management that it was the right thing to do. And it's mostly an execution fault, not a actual like remote work issue. Right. Like, remote work can work, but it's just, you need to execute it. It's not easy. Like, you can't just like, oh, everyone's just working from home and that's it. Like, here's your laptop. Good luck. It doesn't work that way. You have to change the way you do business, essentially. And one of the things that becomes really difficult is the fact that, hey, like, people just are going to work, feel like they need to work more. It's going to happen because there is no, again, there's not 9 to 5 anymore. They're just like, sit down at a computer. And then sometimes they'll get distracted and go for a coffee in the kitchen and be back in half an hour. And they're going to be like, well, I need to make up that half an hour. And now I have to work till 5:30 and then et cetera. And then sometimes that adds up and you end up working till 8, till 9 because you feel bad. A lot of it is obligation. Again, like, a lot of people will do it because they feel obligated and they feel like they're lucky. Like, the reason I'm talking about this is because I've talked to a few people that have recently switched to remote work from in class or in person. And they're like, I feel bad because I've just been commuting for hours a day and now I sit at home and like, I feel like I'm not doing anything and I just feel bad. And like, so I do more work. And I'm like, that's crazy, but makes sense. Like, it's a completely different perspective. And you just came from the world of everyone in the office and you have that connection with those people in the office and you're like, shit, I'm lucky. But then at the end of the day, you're working more than you were before. So are you?
There's like that weirdness, right, too, where – so like right now in Canada, a lot of the jobs that I'm seeing on job boards, and I haven't done a massive survey, are no longer remote. A lot of them are hybrid. You get like one day off – or not one day off, but one day not in the office and the rest of – and 4 days in the office, or maybe 2 work from home days and then 3 days in the office. Those kind of seem to be the thing. Now, yes, I understand there's a whole political thing in there where cities need to pay taxes and they need people in there. I'm not getting into that. What I'm trying to get at is, even before we had this whole like, should we work remote? Should we not work remote? We were already working remote without talking about it. Quite literally, with the invention of pagers, cell phones, Blackberries, data on the go. People were just like, well, I can email all the time. I can call all the time, text all the time. Back in the day, it was sort of like if you worked in a place, oftentimes it was a trade because that was, you know, largely what people did. And you can't bring your milling equipment. You can't bring your welders and all your stuff home to then work on a big machine that you also brought home. Totally unfeasible. It doesn't work like that. And if the work wanted to call you in, of which many people I'm sure were called in, they had to call you on a landline. If you weren't home or you weren't at the local restaurant or your hangout and you were out somewhere, I mean, unless you had a car phone in because you were mega rich, that's it. Like you can't be contacted. They're going to have to try to call somebody else at home to come in and do the work. And some trades still benefit from this to an extent. Obviously there's cell phones and such, but like many trades, they can't bring, if you're working on train cars, you can't bring a train car home and do a little bit of work and then bring it back as easily as you could bring a laptop VPN into work and then do some stuff. Right. So there was even before sort of COVID-19, the rise of remote work and that sort of conversation hit the ground. It was sort of like when we saw mobile work, I think is what they really called it back then. It was like, oh, you can work on the go. You can work on the go. You can work on the go. I remember hearing that all the time. It's like when CEOs and people hear that, they're going to go, excellent. So what we'll have is we'll have our people commute on trains for four hours, so 2 hours each way. They'll work for those 4 hours. Then they'll go. Then they've commuted to the office. They'll work the 8 hours. Then they'll go home. But then they'll set up all the stuff on email. Right. They'll like be on their Blackberries and on their cell phones and they'll set up all these things on email. And then the things that they've set up are things that need to be done on a computer. So now they're home and maybe they can do a little bit at home in preparing for the next day, hit the ground running the next day. Wouldn't that be great? 100%. A bunch of people, a bunch of CEOs and stuff, productivity people were definitely like, yeah, this is going to be incredible. And it's almost like the situation you were describing, Mike, where people just don't know what to do with themselves without the commute time. If they've transitioned to remote, it's almost like they're getting pulled into that old work on the go mentality where they're kind of getting pulled in. Like, I may as well send emails. I may as well check on this. I may as well check on that.
Yeah. It's frustrating and it's annoying, but it is kind of the reality. The other difficult thing with software development is the fact that it's really difficult to estimate, right? Like when you're working for a software development project, depending on whatever it is, it might never have been done before. So how can you possibly give a timeline to it? Well, you try to break it down into pieces and give timelines to the pieces that you know, and then give some questionable times and stuff like that. There is a method to it, but a lot of times that method is very flawed. And so what ends up happening is at the end of the deadline, everyone's pushing to get it out, there's going to be crunch. And a lot of times in that crunch period, like that's when work-life balance goes out the window because like, you're expected to get it done. And a lot of times you're giving ownership to the people that are making the project, right? Like you're invested in it because you're making it. You're the ones that are extracting the requirements and stuff like that. And they'll feel obligated to get it out at the time that they need to get it out on. And again, this leads to this perpetual issue where like as soon as you finish that project and you're finished that crunch, you can move on to another project that might have already started a crunch or might be in a crunch period, and then you're crunching and crunching and you're going to grind people out. So like software in general is difficult to estimate. I think most projects, like large construction projects too, but I think they're a little bit easier in the sense that we've done everything before. With software, it's still kind of an unknown property a lot of times, and especially if you keep using new technology on top of that, becomes kind of a disaster. The other thing that I wanted to talk about is like, again, we mentioned it before, when you're not working for someone, when you're working for yourself as a freelancer, a lot of times you'll take on multiple projects at the same time because it's more profitable. And then it's like, sometimes you're working two full-time jobs because like these projects can also get to crunch periods because you've set expectations, you've set deadlines, there's scope creep. And we talked about all the different things that can happen that can go wrong in a freelance project. Well, two freelance projects, both those things can go wrong at the same time. And then you're working two full-time jobs. And it's difficult because now it's a different situation where you're not working for someone. You can't just be like, oh, I'm getting paid 8-9 to 5. You're working for yourself and your own reputation. So now you're obligated pretty much to put in that time. And it's very difficult. It becomes a problem. Like it becomes a work-life balance problem.
I actually have two... or one main point, I suppose I should say as well, which is a big problem with, it's kind of one point with two subpoints. It's the estimating, and it's also all about digital availability is sort of the overall arcing thing. And digital availability refers to the fact that I've already mentioned, like, work on the go, you have cell phones and laptops and all these mobile technologies and mobile internet that allows people that work on those devices to continually work either in part or in full from wherever they are in the world, more or less, right? Or at least much more mobile than, again, like a welder that has to weld like box cars on a train, obviously. So the whole thing, the whole point of digital availability, the whole thing is, it also affects people in their personal life, is that people will constantly receive emails. They will constantly receive DMs, Slack messages. The list goes on and on and on. And this happens in people's personal life too. People constantly trying to plan things. People constantly wanting to do stuff. Hey, you around? Hey, you doing this? Hey, you doing that? And it's this constant digital availability. And surely, you know, if you miss some messages, which I'm sure you will, you miss some messages. But digital availability refers to everyone just assumes you're around all the time because they know the phone is with you. I'm guilty of it. Mike's guilty of it. Everyone's guilty of it because we assume the person that you're sending a message to also has their phone on them. And you're just assuming a digital availability. And some people will get affected by it because A, they're getting too many messages, or B, people are then saying, you never answer on time. You don't answer quick enough. And then it becomes this like, oh my God, I need to get a smartwatch to like tap my wrist so I'm more available. And it's this constant sort of thing. Digital availability, at least for me, is actually a huge struggle with both work and just general life because I always try to get back to everybody. I'll miss messages. Sometimes I'll get like chirped for it, usually as a joke. But it's just, it's a constant balance. And I was talking to my girlfriend about this the other day. I was saying like, cell phones have added a part to each of our day where if let's say you're out doing something, whether it's work or play, right? It doesn't matter. You're out doing something and you're away from your cell phone for a few hours. You need to have like a 10, 15 minute period where you sit down and answer all the crap that has come into your cell phone, right? Answer all the messages and emails and check things and whatever. It's no longer like, oh, like once I get back from, you know, enter activity here, when I get back, the answering machine at the most, right? Back in the 90s, the answering machine will have some messages for me and I'll check it. I can't check that thing on the go, but I can VPN in, I can check backups now, I can, the list goes on. And the digital availability is such a disaster. Like it's so annoying. Now, let's just say you're good at ignoring messages. Some people just ignore messages. They don't give a crap. If people chirp them, they don't care, right? They don't care. So that's great. So there's some people are able to deal with that. The big problem comes in with work. So with work, what ends up happening is because we're working asynchronously with remote work and because we're also working internationally. So even if we're all going into the office, but it's an international office, so different time zones is what I'm getting at. Obviously, emails can be sent and received and read at any time, assuming the system is working. The problem there is that because digital availability is sort of expected, you might feel obligated, even if you don't need to check that email. What this leads to, though, is situations in which, let's say I'm coding something away. I have a project and there's four parts. I'm able to do three of them. And then the fourth one requires someone else do something before I can complete it. That other person, I'll email them, maybe DM them, whatever the normal channel of communication is, and I can't get through to them. And it's really frustrating for me because I'm thinking, where's this person? I need this thing. I need this, you know, this bit of code. Where's that pull request? You know, where's this? Where's that? You're waiting. Then you're like, okay, I'm trying to be safe, I guess, with my work-life balance. I'm getting off work at 5 today. I have to leave. I have to do something. And you know right away that right at 5 or right at 4:30, right before you're about to leave, bling, here's all this stuff. Now I feel obligated to do part 4. And then now my time estimate and my work-life balance for the day has gone out the window. And this happens all the time with digital availability because people will just take off, go to the gym, do whatever, which I'm not saying that they shouldn't be doing. But what I am saying is that it's this back and forth of the constant, like, you know what it actually is? It is the red light on the BlackBerry. Do you remember that, Mike? Back in the day, people used to get like, almost like, you know, some trauma from being like, my BlackBerry's off. Like the sound is off so I could sleep. But I see the red light blink, blink. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, it's a notification light because phones used to have them. Notification light, blink, blink, blink. And you're like, well, what is that? Is that my family hurt? Is it my work calling me? Is it an email? Is it a stupid receipt, you know, for like a Netflix or something like that? What is it? What is it? What is it? What is it? And then you're like, okay, I'll just do it. That's digital availability. And it hurts, again, the personal and the professional side of things. And it's a major problem. And it kills me. Like if I hear my work phone go off because I forgot to silence it after work, it's like, well, I guess I'm checking this. And if I get pulled into something, I guess I'm getting pulled into it because I know it'll bother me. And like, that's my mental state. Probably not good, but that's what happens. So digital availability, I think in 2024 is a huge problem, both personal and professional.
Yeah. It's a really difficult one. And I don't have a perfect solution for any of that, unfortunately. But I think, again, getting it out there, understanding it is part of the solution. Because if you're just like living in it without identifying it, that's really what gets you. You're just grinding through the digital availability problem. And you don't even know why you're feeling that way. Once you start to narrow down, like, okay, it's because of that, you know, BlackBerry LED, or it's because of the fact my phone vibrates at night, it's because of that. You can take steps to get around it, you know, turning off your notifications, having certain focus periods and stuff like that. But I say that it's difficult to manage all that. Like, it's impossible to like get it perfect. Matt, like you said, you sometimes forget to turn off your phone notifications for work and then you're screwed. And then like, yeah, you can set automatic profiles and stuff like that, but sometimes you're going to need to not set that profile or turn it off because you're waiting on a call or something. And then it's screwed. Anyway, like it's impossible to get it perfect. It's impossible to have like perfect digital availability where like you're on at 8, you're off at 5, and there's no cross section in between, right? Like it's impossible at this point in time, which is unfortunate because that'd be awesome. Like that'd be great. Having said that, certain days, 100%, you need to set aside to be able to do that kind of thing, right? Like no meeting days, essentially. No, you're not in communication. We have one at the place that I'm working right now where Wednesdays are no meeting. So I know that Wednesday I can get a chunk of work done. I don't even need to check my phone for meetings or stuff like that. I can just kind of still monitor my messages here and there, but I know that it's going to be a lighter day. And a lot of times it is a very light day in terms of communication. So I get a lot of work done. And so setting those boundaries internally in a company can help everyone across the board, including yourself, get work done. Setting those boundaries with yourself, like if you can't control the company's way, you can, you know, block off periods in your calendar where you're busy. You're busy. Like maybe whatever you're doing, like maybe you're on a meeting with someone else, who knows? And that can help you get those focus work periods and help you get out of the habit of checking your phone and stuff like that. But it's not perfect. Like you're still going to have that thing gnawing at the back of your head of like, should I be checking? Should I be checking? And the unfortunate reality is there's nothing that can really stop that because it's a dopamine thing. It's part of having a phone now. Like it's just like it's how you get addicted, right? Like it's an actual like chemical addiction to your phone where you just have to constantly be checking in case something happened. Even though like reality is like nothing's going to happen. Like, you know, we survived for so long without this constant connection. We would survive further on. But now that we have it, it's just impossible to turn off.
Well, the thing is, though, is like here's the weird thing about that. Is that if you don't check it, it's almost like Schrodinger's notification, you know, it's like, if you're like, oh, like I don't have any emails or anything, but it's because my phone's on silent, it's not vibrating. And so I haven't looked at it. I have not checked. I have no emails. But what ends up happening is one day you will check and there would have been an absolute disaster. And you missed 12 calls, 6 emails. And now that, at least for me, that resets me where I'm like, okay, I got to be on it. I have to check my phone more. And it brings me back into that sort of addiction and that sort of cycle of constantly checking digital availability.
Exactly. Next thing here is because of constantly changing tech, it kind of weighs on you that you're not only like you're working 9 to 5 or however long you're working, but now in the back of your head, you're like, should I be upskilling? Should I be like, you know, checking out the latest framework that's out? Like, should I check Svelte out even though I'm working with React because who knows if it's going to take over? And that kind of impacts your work-life balance because like now you're almost like working after work, especially if you're not passionate about the tech, right? Like a lot of people aren't passionate about all the newest stuff that's coming out. Like you're just doing your job. So having to like stay on top of all that and like also do your job and then also balance life can get difficult. Not easy. Remote teams, another little thing here like that I've noticed working in a globally remote environment is that some people, like I'm in Canada. I work with people in Australia. We don't, like, the time zones don't mix. And most of the work that we can do is async, but you're still going to need those meetings here and there. And that means that either the Australia team is sacrificing their evenings or mornings or the, you know, North America team is sacrificing their evenings or mornings. So sometimes you're just required to work, like have a meeting outside work hours to accommodate. And that happens more and more, as you work across time zones. It's just going to continually happen. You can, again, limit it by being like, I can only do those meetings on Mondays or something like that. And that helps for sure. But realistically, like, you're still going to have some weird days where you're just feels like you're working the whole day because of this stuff, right? Because of the fact that not only do you have this work-life balance thing, but now you have like remote global workplaces. So having said all that, there's also specific situations now in 2024 that make work-life balance a little bit more difficult. So we've talked about this in previous episodes, but the landscape for jobs in tech or in web development is becoming harder and harder. A lot of layoffs. Google laid off another 13,000 people or whatever this week, and it just continually keeps coming. Like, these layoffs just keep coming and coming and coming. So that puts this like pressure on you. And again, I mentioned like that constantly needing to like look at other tech. Well, in the back of my mind, I'm constantly thinking like, maybe I should be upskilling. Like, should I be learning this technology? Like, after work, should I learn this? Because if I were to lose my job today, I would need to probably like be better.
Or should I be side hustling as a safety net? But then that's more work.
Correct. Exactly. And then all that in the back of your head at all times in a bad job environment makes it more difficult to have this work-life balance. Because if you just clock out at, you know, 8 p.m. At 5 p.m. and do your fun stuff, like, you know, spend time with your family and all that, someone else isn't doing that. Like, someone else is fighting for their job, fighting for getting better skills, fighting, like creating projects, doing side hustles. And just, it's very difficult to compete in today's life, in today's world, without overstepping your work-life balance boundaries.
It's that tug of war again, is like that corporate elitism. I don't even know if that's the right way to say it, but like the corporate elitism versus trying to have work-life balance. It's that where someone is going to go elite and get super, super into it, and they're going to beat you, chances are.
Yeah. And the other thing is like a lot of people are laid off and their full-time job is looking for work. And I've seen people be burnt out, like destroyed by the job search right now, because for them, it's like they're putting in hundreds of applications, thousands of applications to different companies. Every application is different. Every application requires manual entry. Every application requires like a form online and something you have to submit with the resume. You have to tailor your resume to every application. Like, it is almost a full-time job. It is a full-time job to apply. And then while you're applying, you're also, again, you're upskilling, you're networking. All that has to be balanced with like your life. Because even though you lose your job, your life doesn't just stop. You still have, you know, you have to help your wife. You have to, you know, go get your kids. You have to do all this stuff on top of looking for work, which is already an extremely stressful situation. Like, you can't imagine a more stressful situation than that. So yeah, like, work-life balance from just looking for work is brutal right now. Standing out to avoid layoffs. Like, we talked about this, where like you have Jim that works 8-9 to 5, good worker, he's fine. But you have Bill that goes in and, you know, works 12 hours a day, does twice as much as Jim. Who are they going to lay off? And I'm not saying this to scare you or to say anything, but like, this is the reality of some situations that we need to consider and think about, because it's bad. Like, it's bad for everyone. It's bad for Jim. It's bad for Bill, because you're now expected to work 12 hours. And you're making your team work 12 hours, right? Like, because they need to catch up with you. Otherwise, in the next layoff, you're going to be cut, no matter how good you are. You're just not putting in the hours. So like, that's a tough one right now, because again, people are afraid of layoffs, especially in big tech.
Well, I'll also say this is like, obviously there's the stress of trying to apply and trying to do those type of things. But I did a completely random Indeed search. So this is Indeed Canada. It's a job board listing website if you don't have Indeed in your area. And I just typed in web developer. So this isn't heavily researched, but this has to do with your life. So first thing comes up here, front-end web developer, remote, $20 to $25 an hour. Another one here, web developer, remote, $68,000 an hour. Or $68,000 an hour. $68,000 a year. Yeah, I was about to say, woo-wee!
Yeah, I'm going to buy that. Sorry.
$68,000 a year. Now, that might sound great, but if you live in Canada, those are really bad for the skill that you need to have. They're bad. Like, just straight, I'm just going to be honest. Like, those are bad wages. It's not enough. And I know that many people do live in Canada on less. But in terms of what web developers were getting paid in sort of the hiring boom that was COVID-19, this is a very far cry. Again, this is only two random jobs that I've searched up. Reason why I mention this is that if we're talking work-life balance, life has a lifestyle. So if you do find a job that pays significantly less than what you were being paid before and your budget was maxed out or close to maxed out from before, now your lifestyle also has to change. This is another struggle that you're going to have with work-life balance, because then you're going to think, well, this one job, full disclosure, that's $20 to $25 an hour, Monday to Friday, but it says it's part-time. Now, again, I haven't dug into it, but maybe that's 2-3 hours a day. Do I get a second job? But we just talked about how hard it is to estimate projects. So is it actually only a few hours a day? Or is it actually more like it should be a few hours a day and it's 8 hours a day, and then you got a second job so that you were being paid $40 an hour effectively because you got two of the same type of job. And the list goes on, right? I don't want to snowball and talk about it forever, but this is where things start to get out of control.
Yeah, it's a scary situation. There's no other way to put it. Like, it is a scary situation for a lot of people. The good news is that we're in a downturn right now for the industry. That the good news is, again, is that it's usually temporary. Like, or historically, there's been downturns and there's always upswings. So if you can survive the downturn, doing whatever you can, staying at your job, doing a lower paying job even to continue getting the experience, adjusting your lifestyle, there will be an upswing where you will be able to monetize on that upswing, like find another job that will pay you more. Historically, that's been the case forever in all industries. So just keep that in mind. I don't think web development is going anywhere anytime soon. I think there's still going to be plenty of work available and different challenges, and companies are going to start like hiring at some point again. I think what's happening right now is more of a course correction because of the blatant overhiring and the infinite money trick that companies were using with low interest rates. That's stopping now. So it's going to be maybe a more gradual climb back up. So the course correction is harsh. The gradual climb will be a little bit slower than it was with the 2020s, but it's going to get better. So you just need to kind of work it out, stay like grind it out, essentially, which is unfortunate to say, but that's the reality.
I would like to say one small thing here, just as a joke to sort of lighten the mood a little bit. I just clicked on one of these jobs. It wasn't one of the two that I found. I just kind of scrolled down here, and they have here front-end web developer from $45.54 an hour from those. Okay, so you know there's room to grow and move around that number. Freelance, it says, but this is my favorite part. Monday to Friday plus two. So I'm like, what does that mean? Because it's tagged with that. So I click in here and it says Monday to Friday, every weekend on call. So that's not Monday to Friday. It's 7 days a week. Like, I don't know. I thought that was funny.
Yeah.
I thought it would lighten the mood a bit. That's wild. But that's my piece. Sorry.
I mean, there is something to also to be said that apparently like 95 or something percent of the jobs on Indeed are scams.
Or good. Fake.
Yeah. So like the Indeed is not a good metric to find a job anymore. Like, again, people are applying to thousands and getting nothing back. So a lot of companies will apparently leave their requisitions open, even if they're not hiring, just to maintain that like marketing on Indeed, or just to make sure that they have a plethora of resumes to go through when they are hiring. So it's kind of a shit show in that sense. The best way to get a job, as it's always been, is connections. And that's the other thing in work-life balance, that like managing work and then also maintaining the connections in the industry, that's key. Like, that's a really key thing that you need to do, but holy shit is it difficult. Like, it's energy, the energy you need to put to, like, you know, reach out to friends at old companies, reach out to go to meetups, go to local meetups, all that. Like, it could be fun, and ideally you want to find ways that you can do it so that it kind of benefits your work-life balance, because maybe you love the meetups, you're a social person and you need that kind of connection, especially if you're working remotely. Do it. That's a great way to balance. That's a great way to have like that extra little bit of work that you're doing on top, but still have fun, because you're maintaining those connections. Because again, at the end of the day, that's the way to get a job. A good job, I should say. You can still get a job the traditional way of applying. I'm not saying that that's impossible, but it's very difficult. And a lot of times you're going to be getting those jobs that Matt's saying, 5+1, or like some stupid, like low salary positions and stuff like that, that have 1,000 applications for whatever reason. It's better to go the route of finding that niche that you're good at, finding the people that you can relate to, and just helping each other out. Like if a friend of mine needs a job and I'm hiring, I'll help them out immediately rather than open up a requisition and get thousands of applications. Right. Like I saw on Twitter, someone opened up, like just put a tweet out being like, hey, I'm hiring for my company. And they got 2,200 applications in less than 7 days. 2,200 applications. And then they did a live stream, like going through them. And it looked like hell. Like it looked like they progressively became less sane as the live stream went on, because like you're looking through these applications, which like I think a lot of them are AI generated at this point. So, and it's obvious.
Oh,
like,
that's interesting.
Bad. Yeah. Like, so it's just bad. A lot of them are scams. Like I had this one scam. I think I've told this on the podcast before. I don't remember. I have. Someone reached out to me on LinkedIn and they're like, hey, I have this proposition for you. If you can come in and help us with interviews, we'll give you like $500 per interview. And I'm like, as a hiring manager, like I've done hiring before. I was like, I can sit on panel interviews and help out. Like that's $500 an interview. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah.
What it ended up happening was it's not you helping them hire people. It's you sitting in as someone else and getting hired to a company fraudulently. Yeah. So you're pretending to be someone that you're not.
Okay.
Right. Like you're given a resume from someone that you are not. And you're supposed to go to this meeting and like as they're asking you questions, you essentially like they sent me a video showing how this works, right? They sent me like here's an example video of someone else doing it. And the person was being asked questions about Vue.js, has never worked with Vue.js, was literally Googling the question as it was being asked, and then just gave the first result of Google. It's like the little description that was said there for every answer. And when they were pressed to go further, they could not go further. And
of course.
Like, it was just garbage. Like it was a huge scam, like a huge scam. And I called them out, like we had a huge conversation because I just wanted the mentality of someone that's doing this. I was just really interested in this situation that was happening, unfolding in front of my eyes. I was like, this is bullshit. Like, why would you do this? They're like, well, you know, we go to 100 interviews, we place a couple people in there and they get paid American salaries. We take 80% off the top and pay the person that's actually doing the work in Indonesia, like 20%. And so this is happening across the board. These fake resumes are being sent out with fake people going to the interviews. And now you're dealing with that as a hiring manager. So again, of course, you're going to try to get your friends involved in the hiring process because you don't want to deal with that. Like having like the HR situation, everything is just brutal.
I never even thought of spam inside of the job recruiting space, other than the recruiter spamming people. But I never thought that it'd be fake jobs. And that's wild.
Yeah, this is a completely separate tangent from the work-life balance thing, but it is kind of like an important point because it's not just the fact that you're applying and it's really difficult for you, and it is difficult. It's way more difficult for you, I should say, than the company dealing with the spam applications. But it also negates your applications 90% of the time because companies are just like, fuck, I don't want to deal with this anymore. They're just like, Bill, do you know anyone? Jenny, give us anyone. Like, I can't look through this anymore. I can't deal with these scams. And that's what ends up happening. And like, again, companies, like people just talk and get people in. So that's my biggest recommendation for if you're looking for a job, make sure that you're networking. Really difficult to find a job otherwise. Having said that, let's give some advice on not going insane. Cause I feel like just talking about this, Matt and I are going insane a little bit. So let's bring it back to some positives. How do you avoid it? How do you avoid the work-life balance disparity, the constant working times? One way is find the balance that works for you. Again, like I mentioned at the very start of this episode, what works for someone else might not work for you. That balance is not the same as 8 hours a day here, 8 hours a day there. The balance is like, what can you do that makes sense for you? So maybe, again, you work at your job 8 hours a day, and then you have, maybe you really like meetups. You go to a meetup for 2 hours or an hour once a week, and that's your social time. And that's your leveling up time and your networking time and stuff like that because you like it. You find that you enjoy it. If you don't like meetups, then maybe you like participating in open source, whatever, right? Like that's another way to kind of upskill and meet people and network and have a better like chance of getting a job. Like there's different paths you can take that maybe you can enjoy rather than just being like, okay, I have to sit down and look at a textbook for 8 hours after my 8 hour job. And I hate everything about this life. You can find a balance with what the activity that you're doing and the time that you're doing it. Like if you need to learn to code after work,
you might not be able to give 8 hours of learning time. Like, it's just not realistic. But can you give an hour? Maybe. An hour every day adds up. Maybe a couple hours extra on the weekend. Boom. Like, you're like 8 hours a week. That's a lot of time if you're consistent at it, right? And that's not asking a ton from you. Like, you just sit down for an hour, try a different programming thing, and you're good. Like, that's it. You've checked that box. And you're going to get better and better and better if you do that more and more and more. Again, and it's the same thing with not upskilling, but it's the same thing with anything, right? Like, it's the same thing with applications. Like, so if you're laid off, right, you can apply to jobs for 8 hours a day, but is that going to burn you out? And is that going to make your applications worse? Yes.
Of course. Yeah, of course.
Right. Well, what happens if instead of that, you do 1 hour or 2 hours a day of applying, and the rest of the time you network, upskill, do other stuff that benefits your job search, but it's not directly the search.
You can also, like, freelance is a common one where people will just pick up like a job on, whether it's a job board or whether you know somebody that just needs a quick Webflow job or WordPress job, or, you know, hey, my slider doesn't work. Things like that happen all the time. A couple $100. Yeah, I'll fix your slider.
Yeah, that's absolutely the thing. Like, there's many different paths you can take. And again, finding that balance that works for you is the key thing here. And you're going to screw it up in mesh sometimes. Like, I'll bring this back to, like, a little bit of gaming, right? Like, sometimes I'll buy a game or I'll be hyped about a game and I'll sit down and I'll play it for 4 or 5 hours and I don't enjoy it. Even though I was hyped about it and everything, like, I tried it, I don't enjoy it. And I'm at the point in my life where I'm just like, why do I care? Like, why would I continue to play this? Yes, it's a hyped game. Yes, everyone loves it, but I don't like it. There's a million other games out there. I'll try a different one, right? Like, and that's okay. You could try different things and you could fail and you can not like certain things that you try. Try something else. There's plenty of different options.
I think the thing too with the networking as well is it allows you to actually do what came up in the James Quick episode, which I will link in the show notes if you want to listen to that. But James Quick said something along the lines of work toward doing more of the things that you enjoy. And so you can see the layoff almost as a way to say, okay, you know, in that job, I was 50% data entry and 50% developer. I absolutely despise the data entry. Let me try to find a job that has less data entry. Maybe you really like the management angle. Okay, maybe I'm looking for a tech lead position, which is sort of on many companies like a hybrid of you're still working in the tech, but you're almost learning to be a manager, if you will. You're a tech manager, I guess you can call yourself that. And then, or maybe you just want to go manager. You can go toward, you know, the list goes on and on. It work more toward things that you enjoy and apply maybe toward more things that you enjoy if the job market allows.
If you need it, set hard boundaries and be clear about them. Okay. So I say if you need it, I've bolded if, because some people don't. Some people are okay jumping around and some people are okay with being connected all the time. I want to make that clear. Right. Like Matt was mentioning that it really gets to him. That's not forever. That's not everyone. Right. And that's not everyone and not all the time. So sometimes you can have periods of months or years where you're fine with it. And sometimes you can just have a switch go off and be like, I can't take this anymore. And I need to set some boundaries. And that's OK. It's not a one thing. Like, it's not a one thing applies to everyone. So if you need it, set those hard boundaries. Like, if you can't do 8 p.m. meetings on Mondays, right, because you have X and Y stuff, let the team know you can't do that, but give them an option of being like, I can do a little bit earlier on Tuesday. Like, we can do an early meeting on Tuesday, or maybe I can do later on Wednesday or something like that. Give them options, but you can be hard about your boundaries. You can be hard. You can be like, I need this time to work. And if you're clear about your expectations and if it makes sense for the company, I guarantee you that most of the time they're going to go towards that for you.
What I was going to say, the thing too, is like, you can test those boundaries. Like, it's good to get in there and actually see what's going on and be like, hey, I can't do this. And if your work also has a hard boundary that hits, you're like, okay, maybe I can be flexible here, but I'll take off like an extra hour on Friday or something like that. Like, it's good to test those boundaries, because it's easy, at least it was easy to me, to always call somebody back right away or always email them back right away and like panic about, oh my God, I haven't gotten back to this person in 2 hours. But in reality, once I started not doing that, it got easier and easier and easier, where I was like, yeah, I could tell this person I'm not available to next week for a phone call. Like, that's just the end of the thing. Because if they told me that, I wouldn't be like, oh, that's it. This person's dumb. I'm out of here. You know, that's silly. So I started setting those boundaries. And then sometimes you overstep. Sometimes it's like, oh man, this person's like not happy that I delayed it this far. Okay. Maybe you could say, you know what? I've opened this up. Let's just get this done. Have that conversation and maybe test those boundaries a little bit. And be, it's a hard boundary, but be flexible almost in a way where it's a negotiable hard boundary. Let's say that.
Absolutely. Exactly. Like you can't, if you're working for someone, you can't be the one that like dictates everything, but you can set those boundaries, ask about them, see if they work and move on. And a lot of times it'll work. Like a lot of times you try these boundaries and a lot of times comes to me and be like, let's try it out. Right. And then everything goes fine. And sometimes it won't. Sometimes it'll be like, well, we need you there Wednesday at this time. And then you have to negotiate and that's fine. Don't overthink. This one's a difficult one. And Matt's been talking about this part is like, it's really difficult to not overthink. It's really difficult to not get bogged down with the red notification light, right? Like it's really difficult to not think about what is happening on the other end of that phone or whatever, like, or at the email that I'm not checking, right? But the reality is that like, this is something you need to train. This is something you can't just like stop overthinking, but maybe slowly one step at a time. Again, setting boundaries inside your devices, it can help you not overthink. And doing it slowly and not cutting off completely can also help, right? Like it may be, you know, again, after 8 p.m., turn off notifications, right? Like now you're setting yourself up, like it's not after 5, so you're giving a few hours after your work. It's after 8, and now you know, like most likely nothing's going to go wrong. And a lot of times what I do, like the way I handle it personally is I have my work notifications off after 5 p.m. I still check my work notifications here and there, like sporadically, because it doesn't bother me so much to check them. Usually nothing's on fire. But I also have a direct number that some of the managers, some of the higher CEO and technical managers can contact me directly. They've never used it before. They've never contacted me on my number, but I know that they can contact me. So I don't need to check my phone if I don't want to. It's not a requirement because I know that there is an emergency line. It hasn't been used yet. It's almost been a year. Not once have I been contacted using the emergency line, but it's there. So having that like out will help you not overthink because there is something there and having it set on your phone will help you clearly make that boundary. The next thing here is learn to notice the signs of burnout because what does overworking do? What does an improper work-life balance do? It will lead to burnout and burnout is probably the worst case scenario. Like when you burn out, for the most part, you're done. Like you cannot work. Your brain no longer function. That's it. You can't do the job. So like some of the signs that it's different for everyone, but some of the signs that you should watch out for is your mind cloudy? Are you not able to focus? Are you dreading things that you liked before? So like before, hey, I really like working on features of the app, but now you're dreading actually like doing the work that you enjoyed before, right? Find the signs that lead to burnout for you and immediately course correct as soon as you feel something like that. And course correction could be anything that we talked about before. It could be taking a vacation, planning a vacation. It could be anything. You need to course correct. Sometimes jobs won't let you course correct or sometimes jobs will pigeonhole you into overworking. You have to find a way out because if you burn out, you can burn out of your job. You can burn out of the industry. I've talked to people that have gone through that process, where they couldn't write another line of code after they burned out because it was just like a traumatic experience. So you need to be careful with that.
Mike has witnessed me burn out in college. Funny enough, we had this big project called the TR project and I broke. I literally had about 3 or 4 panic attacks. And then one day I just woke up and just, I don't care about this. And I didn't care to the point of I gave up like 10% of the grade for something simple. And I remember we were supposed to do a presentation and we were all supposed to be dressed up like a, you know, suit and tie or not that dressed up, but like business casual. And I just showed up shorts and a t-shirt. And I remember you're like, you just gave up 10% on that. I'm like, I don't care. I was done. I finished it. I did enough to pass. I'm out of here. I don't want to hear about this. If you don't like what I did, that's cool. I'm done. I do not care. I spent $736, which was a lot 10 years ago or 8 years ago, whatever it was. For a college student to pay for a project, by the way, I'm done. I don't care. Like I broke completely. And then Mike almost saw me burn out at work where I started being like scared of my phone. I was panicking all the time. I couldn't do WordPress updates. Like I would try to, if someone's like, I gotta log into WordPress. I'm like, if I log in, what if I press log in and the site crashes? I got to the point where I was going hog wild is how I describe it. I was going nuts, scared to look at my phone, do whatever. And those course corrections, the reason why I mentioned these is, you know, yes, they're little funny stories now that you look back at them, but those course corrections, you know, can be major. I now have a work phone. The work phone is separate from the personal phone. Virtually every single notification that goes to my personal phone is personal. All my notifications on my work phone are work. I have that separation. And then another thing that we grew, I guess, on is we had to turn down a project or two where I just like said, hey, I can't support this. This isn't enough money for the amount of stress it's putting us under. That's it. Like, we're done. And that is a growing moment in the business where now we turn people down and we've turned people down. We used to never turn people down despite their budget, pretty much, like unless it was something absolutely ridiculous. We would always stick out the project and stick around. And a little bit of that still exists. And I'm not perfect at that. But it by me turning away a project or a client or two, I'm now able to be like, you know what? This person is taking advantage. This person's not answering or whatever the situation is. I'm out of here. And if it destroys their business, that's unfortunate. I'm out of here. Like I can't work under these conditions. And then we end up making more money somewhere else. And it was a moment in which my course correction actually led to growth, where I have like a BS detector, and like Mike had a BS detector way before me, but it was just sort of like, we look at a project and we just go, we're going to have to add, you know, $2,000 to this budget. And if they say, well, we don't have any money, it's like, then you can't come to us. You know, a bit cutthroat is a growable moment. And it came from, again, a burnout course correction. Start going nuts. It's like, okay, that's it. Taking a week off, getting a work phone, course correcting, turning some people down, moving on. And like, I'm here. I'm still working in the industry. So course corrections are important, and they're not always bad, because like I said, I learned some stuff.
Yep. And they could be radical. They could be small. They could be any, like you could start looking for a new job.
Yeah.
That's a course correction. And it's a tough one, but sometimes you just need to take that step, because if everything is that toxic and if you're at the point where you're burning out, believe me, you need to course correct. It's a necessity rather than a option. It's not like, oh, I'll just stick it out and I'll just burn out. Like that's not an option. If you burn out, you're done.
And it will affect your, we're talking work-life balance. It'll affect your life balance. Because I would talk about the stuff that was bugging me as I was burning out in my personal time all the time. It would constantly come up, but it's like, I'm like, all my time that I'm off, I'm dreading the thing that's coming up. And then as I'm doing it, it's dreadful. So I'm dreading, or it's dreadful, and it's a nightmare. It's a total disaster. And it's not laziness. I think people think that it's laziness. I'm still doing a bunch of projects. You know, I'm not just sitting around. Still doing a bunch of projects, still doing stuff. It's just, in that particular case, it was certain projects, certain workloads, and certain types of work. And also having answered the phone and emails every day for like 6 or 7 years at that point. Like I was basically on call for like 6 or 7 years. I mean, Mike's the same thing. And I just went nuts. I couldn't handle it. One day I just broke, and that was it.
Yeah, I think it's a tough episode to do. We do it every once in a while. We lay it all out there, how we feel, how we're combating it, the situation as it stands, because I hope that someone going through this will realize that they can change what they're going through. And I hope that people that maybe aren't there yet will avoid it in the future, right? Like the work-life balance is an important aspect of your life. And if you disregard it, it could lead to you ending your career or other bad things. But like, yeah, ending your career is a very common one. But that's it, I think.
Yeah. I mean, it like just to reiterate that, like ending your career, but also you might end up leaving the field, you know, and it's like, that's not good, you know, and I assume burnout could have even more side effects that are even more severe. That would be, you know, more of a doctor's area to talk to about. But man, like just avoid that burnout and try to keep that work-life balance up. I mean, that's kind of the goal. I mean, I know it's the dream. I know it's a challenge, but it's important. But I think that concludes this episode. And if you want to support episodes like this, remember that we are on Patreon. That is patreon.com/HTML, all the things. And many thanks to our $3 tier patrons, Tim from The Web Hacker on thewebhacker.com, Jason from Geek Life Radio via geeklifradio.com, Fire Ant Season via fireantseason.com, Garrett Segal, Level Up Financial Planning via www.levelupfinancialplanning.com, and Joshua via silvio.us. We'd also like to give a shout out to Michael LaRocca, which is a contributing author on htmlallthethings.com. You've probably seen his recent articles on, we've been doing interviews with people, and then he's been running a companion article and doing a great job with that. He also has other articles on our site and go check out. But he is also the author of Self-Taught The X Generation blog at selftauttxg.com if you want to go check him out there as well. And feel free to leave a comment or a review on the platform you're listening to this on. And this outro will sign us off.
You've been listening to HTML All the Things Podcast. Web development, web design, and small business. We hope you've gotten some useful and practical information from this show. And we hope you appreciate that we talk to you like human beings. And we hope you had some fun. We'll be back soon. But in the meantime, hit us up on social media. On Facebook, Instagram, and Patreon at HTML All the Things. And on Twitter at HTML Everything. Until next time, this is HTML All the Things. Signing off.